Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, May 3rd. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Jewish leaders dispute allegations of anti-Semitism in Cal Poly Humboldt protests and express disappointment in local leaders. Eureka holds Embracing Humanity Town Hall Saturday. And weekend celebrations honor Indigenous, Chinese, and Mexican cultures. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Multiple Jewish faith leaders have issued a statement this Friday afternoon in response to Cal Poly Humboldt State Senator Mike McGuire and Assembly Member Wood's characterization of the anti-war solidarity encampment being anti-Semitic. They explained that using the term to describe these protests is a weaponization and dilution of a real threat to their community, and reject it as a justification for the police force used against the protesters. Quote, "This inappropriate justification is all the more problematic because it was done without any consultation with Jewish community leaders," end quote. The letter also goes on to explain that there have been problems with anti-Semitism in the past, and the campus not only ignored the issues, but refused to communicate and work with Jewish leaders who sought to advise on the issue. For more, we go to one of the letter's authors.
Rabbi Naomi Steinberg, I've been serving Temple Beth El in Eureka and B'nai Ha'aretz in Redway, Garberville.
The letter states that in the past decades, very few anti-Semitic incidents on campus came to their attention. Similarly, they stated that for decades, there was very little anti-Semitic activity in the community at large. But things have changed in recent years, even before the October 7th attack.
And in the last couple of years, Lauren, we've spoken a couple of times about a big rise in anti-Semitic activity up here. For decades, there was very little, and I felt really blessed, and I love being a rabbi. But recent years, especially, let me be frank, since the Trump administration.
In the fall, there was an anti-Semitic crime on campus with the desecration of a harvest sukkah.
And then in November, a very troubling petition went out on the all-campus email urging people to rally to the Palestinian cause. And while you know I've spoken very sympathetically to the Palestinian cause for decades and have visited Israel, visited Palestine, worked with rabbis for human rights, done everything I can, the petition was so inappropriate and so poorly worded and so badly timed. Everything about it was wrong. And it turns out that it did not have official sanction. And we have not had any answers to who put that petition on, if the university email was hacked or someone gave permission. It was very troubling. We were very busy over the winter. And in early February, we wrote a letter to administration saying, we're concerned about the bad climate on campus for Jewish faculty, staff, and students. And we want to know, how did that petition get distributed to all, 7,000 people on the list, something like that? Many of whom were very upset, Jewish students especially, said they were shocked to get that on their campus email.
But she said during an actual instance of anti-Semitism, which triggered fear among Jewish students, the university was silent and avoidant.
We made a request to discuss it, and we also have some creative ideas to share. We said to administration, we can come in, talk to you about some things, and we think we can make some improvements. Long story short, they simply ignored us. Very painful, very disturbing.
Rabbi Steinberg stated that they tried for months to get in contact with Cal Poly Humboldt to share their expertise on how to educate and de-escalate the situation.
In those months, the situation deteriorated so badly, so we were pretty appalled a while ago when the the administration put out a press release saying, "We have been in touch with members of leaders of the Jewish community." And I spoke to the other rabbis here. Nope, they hadn't heard from them. I had received one or two phone messages, but they had not engaged in us in a real productive, meaningful way. So we were further alarmed when we saw another press release from the university suggesting that anti-Semitism was one of the root problems they were trying to address by bringing in the police. And that, Lauren, I feel is just total hogwash, to be polite on the radio.
On Tuesday, April 30th, just hours after the police raid, Senator Mike McGuire and Assemblymember Wood issued a joint press release, echoing the university's statement citing anti-Semitic hate speech as a cause for conducting the large law enforcement operation.
So I was quite disturbed when I saw that press release from our wonderful elected representatives, and I feel that they have been misled by the university. In fact, the university ignored serious problems with anti-Semitism for months and then turned around and made spurious claims of anti-Semitism against the protesters.
She explained that while aspects of the protest demonstrated a lack of cultural sensitivity and indifference to Jewish students, that wasn't always the case. And many Jews and non-Jewish students came together in protest of the war that has killed thousands. Notably, earlier in the week, another rabbi with Temple Beth El held a Jewish ceremony in the heart of the ongoing protest.
My dear friend and colleague, Rabbi Bob Rottenberg, lives right across the street from Cal Poly. So he knew there were Jewish students there. Mostly the ones who contacted him were supporting the protests. And he felt compelled that it was his duty to go and have Shabbat with them and give them the love that a rabbi has to give to any Jewish person walking in the door on Shabbat and any non-Jewish guest walking in the door on Shabbat. Shabbat is a time of love, peace, and hope. So he went and attended. I think that it was very well received by the students who were there, who realized, oh, we're not being shunned by the Jewish community because we are outspoken and we're expressing our sorrow and our rage over what's happening in Gaza.
Temple Beth El sent the letter to our elected officials this afternoon, and we asked what they hope it will accomplish.
We want the public to know that we take anti-Semitism very, very seriously. It is a real danger. It's really going on. In the last 2 years, we've had horrible anti-Semitic flyers distributed all over the county, including at Jewish homes, here at Temple Beth El, at Chabad in Arcata. Very, very disturbing. It's real. So we want people to take it seriously. At the same time, we absolutely protest having it, as you said, weaponized, used as a weapon against the protesters. So when I hear people like Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, who represents a very extreme fundamentalist Christian point of view with extreme views about Jews, when I hear him claiming to suddenly be our defender, I know that all he's trying to do is to discredit our universities. They're trying to smear not just the protesters, but our universities themselves. Am I happy with the analysis of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict that's going on in many campuses? No. It's not merely settler colonialism. It's also religious fanaticism. And I'm sorry to say, it's religious fanatics in Islam and also in Judaism. And they play a huge role in this conflict. So that has to be addressed. But I'm very upset. Our universities are the last bastions of free thought. That and the radio and the press. A free press and a free university is essential to our country.
Pulling from her history as a force defender, she says resist by educating yourself with nonviolent training.
If you get involved in any way, in any, if you're planning to be out on the street in any way to express your opinion, get training. Get training. It appears to me that the students on campus had no training in CD and civil disobedience. And we know this from the Headwaters movement, how important that was. Get training, know how to conduct yourself, know how to protect yourself, know how to keep your passions under control, protect bystanders, protect law enforcement too. We are very short-staffed for law enforcement in this county. The last thing we need is them wasting their time out there to arrest kids who are armed with spray cans of paint and magic markers.
The final portion of the letter urges understanding the risks of potential harm and escalation that comes from a politicized use of the term antisemitism, and states that they would like to work directly to address the complex problems and nuances required for future communications.
There is hope. It may not seem like there's any hope right now. I read that that the reconstruction of Gaza and the rebuilding of hundreds of thousands of homes can't be completed until 2040. What will happen to those people? Israel is in a shambles. It's in a terrible civil crisis. It's caught in the thrall of a deranged Prime Minister Netanyahu and some very bad actors in his cabinet. But there is hope. We can get through this, and do not despair.
You can read the letter from Temple Beth-El in full on the KMUD News Facebook page. If any member of the public sees or hears something that endangers the Jewish community, you are asked to report it to law enforcement immediately. You can fill out an anti-Semitism incident report form on the Temple Beth-El website. That's templebetheleureka.org.
The City of Eureka has planned a host of activities for May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. Eureka is kicking off the activities with a town hall event they call Embracing Humanity this Saturday, May 5th, from 10 to 4 at City Hall in the Council Chambers. Other events through the month include a Free Your Mind Walk, supporting kids aged 13 to 18 who have been in the juvenile justice system. That takes place Friday, May 10th. The next day, on Saturday the 11th, there will be a Redwood Coast Mental Health Symposium at the Sequoia Conference Center from 8:30 to 5. The next week, on Friday, May 17th, the Hope Center will hold a Community Connections Barbecue at the Jefferson Community Center at 1000 B Street from 11 to 2. And at the end of the month, on May 30th, there will be a farm-to-table meal for transition-age youth aged 16 to 26. For more information on this Saturday's Embracing Humanity Town Hall, KMUD News spoke with Jacob Rosen, the Crisis Alternative Response Team's program manager. Rosen gave us a little background on Eureka's full-throated adoption of mental health awareness activities this month.
The City of Eureka has some pretty unique challenges as far as the mental health crisis, substance use crisis, and homelessness crisis goes. And the staff there have been really kind of brainstorming what the city could do to be more proactive in trying to meet some of these challenges and you know, help improve the lives of all of its community members. You know, part of that we really identified is needing to do more community engagement. You know, last year we started the Community Health Town Hall series. We did one of those each quarter on a different subject. And we got pretty good feedback on the community engagement with that. And folks seemed to appreciate those events, both providers and public. And so this year, instead of doing one per quarter, we really wanted to do a larger event. And we figured there wasn't really a better time than to kick off May is being Mental Health Month. You know, we've been working with Humboldt County Behavioral Health and DHHS. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, is also partnered with us and has been there for all of these events, and we super appreciate them. And you know, so many community partners have come together. We have a bunch of folks who will be tabling So, you know, if you're curious in resources or networking as a provider, you know, there'll be a lot of folks there. If you're, you know, someone who is experiencing some of these issues, or, you know, has a loved one who is experiencing some of these issues, there'll definitely be resources there. And we just really encourage, you know, everyone to come together as a community, and, you know, participate in this event and, you know, learn together and work together to tackle these issues.
Rosen describes the theme of the Embracing Humanity Town Hall and its format.
We'll emphasize that there can be success stories. You know, I think it's really easy when we see shortcoming after shortcoming, right? Some agency fails to meet a standard in the community, or, you know, there's just folks driving down, you know, 4th or 5th Street, right? I mean, the challenges are obvious. We see them. It's easy to lose, you know, track of the fact that there can be success stories out of that. And so I think really, you know, making sure that we're highlighting those when we have them, and that we're having more dialogue around that, and focusing that, you know, folks can get better. And when people come together as a community, these situations can get better. We're really hoping to inspire that amongst everyone who attends. The event itself will have two panels this time, shorter panels. So each one will be roughly an hour. One of them is made up of professionals in the community. The second one is made up of folks who have lived experience with mental health, substance use, or homelessness issues. And then we'll have a short break, and then we have brought in a keynote speaker from Canada. His name is Joe Roberts, also known as Skid Row CEO, and he has, I had the privilege of getting to see him in Detroit last year, and he has a pretty remarkable story to tell, and you know, we're really hoping that folks can hear that and get engaged by it and be motivated from it.
This movement into success mindset is supported all year long with Eureka's other social service program called Uplift. Rosen gave some highlights of that program, focusing on the supports they provide for people to successfully re-enter the employment market.
In 2018, they established the Uplift Eureka program, and the nonprofit that's associated with that, the Community Access Project for Eureka. And, you know, part of what Uplift has done is really focus on street outreach amongst the homelessness population, as well as, you know, really work toward pulling agencies together and trying to, again, you know, unite to tackle some of these challenges. One of those projects has been doing employment work, and through their program Pathway to Payday, they've been incredibly successful in getting folks through the program, getting them connected to employers. And in fact, this last program that ended last week, they had a 100% success rate in individuals who got through all 4 days getting either a job or brought back in for a second interview with the employers that partnered with us to come to the program and actually interview candidates there. And so, I mean, it's pretty amazing work. And that piece of, you know, inviting, you know, for folks who have been disadvantaged or, I mean, really in many ways disenfranchised, inviting them back into society's fold is super, super important. And some of these employment programs can really get at that piece that, you know, maybe like my crisis team can't.
The Embracing Town Hall, which kicks off Eureka's calendar of events for May, Mental Health Awareness Month, is this Saturday, May 4th from 10 to 4 in the City Council Chambers of Eureka City Hall at 6th and K Street in Eureka. This weekend is a busy one in Northern Humboldt. In addition to the Embracing Humanity Town Hall in Eureka, the second annual Indigenous Food Festival will take place tomorrow, Saturday, May 4th, at the Native American Forum on the Cal Poly Humboldt campus.
I'm Dr. Ketcher Risling-Baldy. I'm Associate Professor of Native American Studies at Cal Poly Humboldt. I'm also the co-director of the Rote Delagoa Food Sovereignty Lab and Traditional Ecological Knowledges Institute. And we're very excited to invite people to come up and learn a little bit more about Indigenous foods and the work that Indigenous peoples are doing in food justice, and also a lot about our traditional ecological knowledge and the things that we share to sort of help people to live in this world in a good way.
The doctor explained the concept behind the Indigenous food movement.
the food sovereignty movement and really comes out of movements in sort of the Southern Hemisphere, this idea that Indigenous peoples have a lot of knowledge about foods and places, and those knowledges can really inform how we can build really healthy biodiversity and ecosystems. And food sovereignty says that Indigenous peoples should have the ability by which to produce, distribute, and consume Indigenous foods and foods, I think, that really are healthy for community and peoples and futures. And we acknowledge that, you know, as a result of colonization, we've been really separated from some of our traditional ecological knowledges. And so that reconnection is really important, I think, not just for Native peoples, but for everybody in communities, as we see the importance of what it looks like to build sort of sustainable futures for each other.
She reminds us how much of the food we currently enjoy is from the Western Hemisphere, unknown to our European ancestors.
I mean, many of the foods that we eat to this day are indigenous to the Americas, meaning that they came from this side of the hemisphere. Tomatoes, potatoes, sweet potatoes, corn, some of the staple foods that we really value came from indigenous peoples. And you're talking about things that we still to this day really rely on. And in California and the areas that we're from, you know, our indigenous foods are really centered around place. And a lot of us are known as what we call acorn eaters. So we eat a lot of acorns. Salmon was always a very important part of our diet, like our staple diet. But really the world around you is full of foods, of plants and of grains and grasses and seeds and fruits and all kinds of things. It's full of food.
The indigenous food movement requires a change in mindset and will require some policy changes to bring food production back to communities.
And ways that we care for those foods to make sure that we're not just over-harvesting or overusing, but that they actually also contribute to the health and life cycle of the ecosystem itself. You also have to build a key relationship with the world around you. So we practice a lot of gratitude, and we practice a lot of really thinking about, like, what does it mean if we take too much of this, or if we don't leave enough of this behind? And those management practices, I think, are really going to inform then what we think about how we make policy, or how we make, like, what laws look like, or even what it means for what we teach young people.
The forum is on Union Street in Arcata, just north of 14th Street, next to the Behavioral Sciences Building. The Indigenous Food Festival goes from 11 to 3 Saturday. And then tomorrow, Saturday evening, after either the Embracing Humanity Town Hall or the Indigenous Food Festival, there will be the third annual Chinatown Street Festival. Patricia Lay explained that the theme of the effort is inclusivity.
Really just trying to build a more engaged and inclusive future. We've been around as an organization since about 2021.
Vicky Ozaki explained the history.
The basic thing is, like, do you know there used to be a Chinatown in Eureka? There was one, and it was in the 1800s, and a bunch of things happened, and political and local, and culminating in the Chinese expulsion of 1885. Almost every single Chinese person was eliminated from the county, and you have 70 years pass. It was so effective, this exclusion and expulsion of Chinese people, and that you have the first out of the area Chinese family come to settle back in the Eureka area only in 1954-ish, and that was the Ben Chin family.
Saturday evening's street fair is free, and everyone is invited to come celebrate the Year of the Dragon. Lay explains that their next focus is on fundraising for a memorial for the people who were expelled. That memorial will be sited down on First Street in Old Town.
And there's a lot of miners and farmers and railroad workers and all this different history, but it just has not been visible. So this is our third year of the Chinatown Street Festival. And then with that, you know, the main focus right now is the Chinatown Memorial. So, we're having our wonderful third annual Eureka Street Festival Saturday, May 4th from 4 to 9 museum to celebrate Asian and Pacific Island Heritage Month, to celebrate the Year of the Dragon, to have a wonderful free public event celebrating Asian culture that the community can engage with. But, you know, a driving force in our efforts this year is fundraising for the Eureka Chinatown Memorial. So there's a memorial site being donated by the city of Eureka on the corner of E and First Street. And we're raising money. We have this beautiful design and we're raising money so we can actually construct this permanent marker in remembrance of Eureka Chinatown and the historic contributions.
After all the important cultural events on Saturday, including the plant sale at Beginnings, Sunday is Cinco de Mayo, and 17 Mexican food restaurants are collaborating to raise funds for English Express on Sunday, May 5th. And also on Sunday, Centro del Pueblo is holding a Cinco de Mayo party at the Jefferson Community Center. KMed News spoke with Marianne Heichten, the program leader and teacher for English Express. She gave us some background. Heichten said the fundraiser is a win-win for the restaurants and for English Express. One of the participating restaurants is in Garberville.
On Cinco de Mayo, the 17 restaurants will donate a percent of their sales that day to English Express, which goes directly back to the students. It allows us to keep our doors open and to keep all of our services free. So in Garberville, our favorite Mexican restaurant in Garberville, Del Cora. And Alicia, the owner, is someone I've known since she just ran a taco truck in Redway. And I was so happy to see her expand to a restaurant. And she was happy to collaborate. So I'm hoping that the Southern Humboldt folks will head over to El Cora on Sunday, Cinco de Mayo. And it will not only support their restaurant, but it will also, of course, support English Express. It's a win-win fundraiser.
Marianne tells KMed listeners where they can learn more about the services English Express offers.
To learn more about English Express or our citizenship program, simply go to our website at EnglishExpressEmpowered.com. The information is on our website. We also have a Facebook page, same name, English Express Empowered. There is no registration required for these programs. We make it as simple as possible for English language learners to participate and receive resources.
And we spoke with Luna of Centro del Pueblo, which creates space for indigenous peoples of the South and other members of the Latin community while promoting awareness of rights and the cultural and artistic revitalization of their ancestral roots. For background, Luna gave the history of Cinco de Mayo from the days when the land from California to Texas was still territory of Mexico in the era of the Spanish missions.
It is a misconception that Cinco de Mayo is Mexico's Independence Day. That is not what the fact. September 16 is Mexico's Independence Day, and Cinco de Mayo is the time that Puebla, the city of Puebla, fought against the French when the French tried to occupy Mexico for an extended period of time from 1862 to, I believe it was 1867. So that was a long time. And so Centro del Pueblo wants to reconnect us with our roots. It is true that this is celebrated more by the United States now, but we do have to recognize that the United States did intervene in the late 1862 after their own civil war here. And so that is how we got to have the French fully leave Mexico, and the intervention was ended.
And then Luna talked about the events that will take place at the Jefferson Community Center at 1000 B Street up in Eureka.
And so it's super exciting to be able to hold these spaces. So with great enthusiasm, we invite you to celebrate a community celebration of Cinco de Mayo. We will host many dance groups, show art, culture, and food. Pupuseria San Miguel, Manzanilla Kitchen, and Centro del Pueblo will be there. We hope that you can show up to experience music and more surprises. Join us at the Jefferson Community Park, located in 1000 B Street, Eureka, from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. to celebrate our Cinco de Mayo.
This is Kelly Lincoln reporting on the wide array of cultural activities up in Northern Humboldt this first weekend in May for KMUD News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, D-Dog. And thanks to our reporter, Kelly Lincoln. KMUD News is online. You can find us on SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, related documents, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email at news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.